Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Hey, everybody. If you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace, because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store, whether you sell physical, digital, or service products. Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now, and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF, and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Attention, world. If you can make it to America, then come see us. We are going out on the road for SYSK Live again, and we are going to start the whole thing off in Chicago on July 24th.
That's right. And if you can't make it to America, maybe make it to Canada, because we're going to be in Toronto on the next night, the Danforth Music Hall. Then in August, we're going to do a couple of dates at the Wilbur in Boston on October 29th in Portland, Maine's lovely state theater on August 30th.
Yep. And then we're going to be heading down to Florida. We're going to be at Plaza Live on October 9th. And then the next night, we're going to be in New Orleans at the Civic Theater.
That's right. And then we're going to round it out in Brooklyn, October 23, 24, and 25 at the Bell House.
Yep. So come see us. You can get tickets and info at sysklive.com.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryan over there. And the ghost of Jerry Rowland is seated next to us.
Just Frank the chair, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, Frank.
Yeah, Jerry, everyone, has a hurt shoulder.
From bowling.
Has to go to the doctor. And did that deal, which he's only done a couple of times, where she just hits record and leaves.
Yep.
And it always feels like the teacher is gone.
It feels really weird in here.
And that we should, like, do something disruptive and wrong.
So we're practicing paper airplanes.
Yeah, basically.
It's the worst thing we could come up with.
We're doing spitballs. Josh just threw a couple of pencils up and stuck them in the ceiling.
I still got it.
Remember that old move?
Sure. Well, clearly.
And what else?
We started a fire in the metal wastebasket.
Yeah.
Chuck's trying out drugs.
Sure.
And we started listening to Motley Crue.
That's right. And we're going to talk about photographic memory, which, as it turns out, is kind of
not real.
Yeah, it's a semantic thing. Photographic memory, it's funny that we're talking about being in elementary school, because it's sort of one of those things that you used to hear a lot on the playground about, you know, so-and-so's got a photographic memory.
I know.
They can read a book and, like, recite every word from it or something.
There's something so juvenile about claiming that you have it yourself as an adult.
Yeah.
It really smacks of that playground thing. I hadn't put my finger on, but that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and as it turns out, what you call photographic memory isn't really a thing. There are people with amazing memories and people with amazing techniques to develop better memories.
Right.
But this whole notion of a photographic memory, like you could walk, you know, like you see on TV or something, isn't really a thing.
No, it's a thing from TV. It's a thing from books.
It's
something that, you know, you attribute to like Sherlock Holmes or just some great genius.
Sure. Or John Holmes.
Sure. Obviously, everybody knows he had a photographic memory. But the idea that you can just walk around and have an experience or, you know, flip through a phone book and like a year later recite that phone book, that just doesn't happen. There's maybe one person who's ever lived that came very close to that, who we talked about before, Kim Peek,
the
inspiration for Rain Man. But they're still not sure if Kim Peek would have really fully fit that bill even.
Yeah.
But for the most part, that idea is not... It isn't. It's not real.
But again, it's also a question of semantics, because if someone has the abilities of a Kim Peek, And it's like, well, you know, isn't that photographic memory?
Basically, right. Right. Yeah. I think maybe then let's say it like this. There, anyone who says that they have a photographic memory is probably full of it.
Yes.
They probably have a better than average memory.
That's what they're saying.
But that doesn't mean that they have a perfect memory, because here's the thing. Even people with outstanding, amazing memory abilities, mm-hmm. they still get stuff wrong.
Sure.
And that seems to be part and parcel with this idea of a photographic memory, that not only is the recall amazing over long periods of time mm-hmm. and in detail and clarity, but that it's flawless too, that they right. don't get stuff wrong.
Yes.
They don't insert stuff that wasn't there originally.
Right.
They don't misremember things. That's part of the photographic yeah. memory. And that doesn't exist.
For sure.
That would be perfect recall, and the brain just isn't really capable of that.
All right. Well, we're going to start out this episode, though, talking about something else that's a slight variation, which is called eidetic memory.
Yeah.
E-I-D-E-T-I-C. And that is something found exclusively in kids between the ages of 6 and 12.
Yeah.
Roughly.
About 2 to 10% of kids during in that age group.
Yeah, so here's what they do for these tests. You get a subject, you get a little 6-year-old or a 7-year-old,
right.
or an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old or 11-year-old or 12-year-old.
Okay, but no more beyond that.
No. And then you show them an image. Kid can look at it for whatever, 15, 20, 30 seconds. Then you take that image away, and then you say, what do you recall about that image? And if you have eidetic memory for a very short term, you can recall with astonishing detail what was in that image.
Yeah, maybe another 30 seconds, maybe up to a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot going on here, all right? So it's not like, here, look at this image, and then you take the image away, and the kid goes over and sits down and like really thinks about what was in the picture.
Right.
The kid holds the pose and their line of sight
mm-hmm.
just like they were when the picture was in front of them, as if they're still looking at the picture.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about eidetic memory. The kid who's showing off their, and people who have eidetic memory are called eideticers.
Okay.
I know, it's weird. But the eideticer isn't recalling what they
right.
saw. They never stopped seeing. They're holding it visually in their line of sight, even though the picture is no longer physically present.
Yeah, and one of the ways they can tell is that they talk about it in the present tense still.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say, well, the picture had a red car with a weird-looking dog driving it.
Right, it's present tense. It's the picture has a red car
right.
with a weird-looking dog driving it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a big one, right? That's, people think, well, that's photographic memory. But that's really the closest thing to photographic memory that science has really happened upon. Well, one of them. We'll get into another one in a little while. But there's a lot of divergence from what you tend to think of as photographic memory. For one, again, it's a very short duration.
Right.
30 seconds, a couple minutes.
And then 5 minutes later, they talk about the picture, and the kid's like, what picture?
What picture?
Yeah.
Where am I? Why did you drug me and tie me up?
Apparently, even them speaking during this period or even blinking can shut it off.
Yeah, and especially not just speaking, but saying what the thing is. Saying out loud, oh, a red car, will make the picture vanish from their
It almost
visual.
Sounds like a trance or something.
Kind of, it does.
It's really
it?
Interesting.
Yeah.
They can make errors as well and put things in there that weren't there. So that obviously is not a photographic memory.
Yeah, the dog driving the car had a cat friend. Like, that's believable.
That's really...
Stupid kids.
Yeah. By the way, everyone, the cats and the dogs are getting along great, just to update that.
Oh, good.
Everyone's getting along fine.
That's fantastic.
But we have one of the kittens is a bed peer, and so we're trying to sort that out.
Oh, boy.
Which is not a fun problem.
You know what the solution to that is? Kitty diapers. The cutest diapers.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting through that. Not fun.
What do? You just like clap loudly next to its
no,
ear?
No, you try, you know, if you catch them, you try and hustle them really quickly into the litter box.
Yeah.
The whole idea is to get them associating litter with peeing and
so it's just like
your bed
training
for not
a dog.
Peeing. Yeah, but usually cats are really intuitive. I've mm-hmm. never had a cat that wasn't like immediately just litter trained.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit distressing.
Yeah, how long has it been going on?
We've had like 3 or 4 bed pees.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
He'll pick it up in no time.
But anyway, just wanted to update everyone. So is this true about the eidetic memory studies being done by the Nazis? Is that correct?
Yeah, the Nazis found out about this. I'm not quite sure how, but they're attributed with some of the earliest studies of eidetic memory. And they, in Nazi fashion, gave it a really bad name because they were using it to promote how the Aryan race was obviously superior because
right.
our kids have eidetic memory.
Right.
And so since, you know, just about anything the Nazis studied, whether it was legitimate studies or not, mm-hmm. it just had a taint to it afterward, a chode, if you will.
Had that Nazi stank.
Pretty much, yeah. right? And so they it was discontinued for many decades. Mm-hmm. And then I can't find out who picked it up. It's really weird. Like when you look up photographic memory, almost everything that comes back for research says photographic memory is not real, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
There is such thing as eidetic memory, but there's almost no information on, like, the actual study of it, who's conducting it.
Right.
Usually it'll be like they'll even cite, like, one study. Everyone will. This doesn't even have that.
Yeah.
It's real cryptic almost and weird and just – I want to say fringy, but there's nobody who questions the science behind it. It's proven that this does exist.
Right.
We know kind of the mechanics of it, how it actually or what the process is, what's actually happening or how kids display this stuff.
Right.
We know how to test for it. So it is real. And there's that catchy name, eidetikers.
Yeah.
It's definitely a real thing, but how it's being studied and who's studying it's just totally lost on me. I can't find it.
Well, and we don't know, you know, why it's only in children or really a whole lot of concrete conclusions about it other than the fact that it happens.
Well, there's some interesting hypotheses about that.
Let's hear it.
Well, the fact that kids from 6 to 12 are developing it and it stops beyond that suggests that it has to do with language development.
Okay.
And the fact that if you verbalize what the thing is, you've labeled it in a certain way and shut your brain off.
Mm-hmm.
That suggests it has to do with labeled or language development too. They think that maybe the kids are not compartmentalizing what they saw in abstracts like people do with normal memories. And so it's able to stay in their visual field even after they're no longer looking at it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but about 2 to 10% eidetic memory.
Well, it is interesting, though, because the word photographic memory, this sounds as close to that as it gets because it almost sounds like they are taking a sort of a brain snapshot.
Right.
Because they're just sort of in a trance and gazing at what it once was.
But again, they can't move. They can't speak. They
right.
can't blink.
Right.
And with, you know, 5 minutes later, once they do blink or whatever and snap out of this trance, if you want to call it that, which mm-hmm. you clearly do.
Yeah.
So we will. We'll just call it a trance.
Okay.
Once they step out of the trance, they can't recall the picture. So it's not a very good example of photographic
yeah.
memory, but it's the closest thing science has shown, aside from some other ones, which we'll talk about later.
All right. Should we take a break?
I think we should.
All right. Let's do it. And we'll talk more about PM right after this.
Hey everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
Squarespace. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com. All right, so they have not found any, like, again, science hasn't come forward and said, hey, there is photographic memory, and this is it, and this is how it works.
Right, all those people who are, like, promoting themselves with having a photographic memory, no one's gotten their hands on one of them and said,
right,
this guy's totally right, he has a photographic memory, or she.
Right.
Or they.
That's right, but the it's still something you hear on the playground. It's still something you hear people tout. And there's a few reasons why. One is, and this kind of has to do with the perfect pitch, is I think humans just like to label and assign geniuses with these tags.
Right.
Like, you know, Tesla had a photographic memory, and it's very easy just to write that down, and it looks cool on a piece of paper. And that's kind of just as simple as that.
He apparently was self-proclaimed with a photographic memory.
A lot of people say this about themselves.
He doesn't seem like the type who would do that.
Yeah.
He seems like the type that people would say about him without him claiming it.
Yeah.
But Mr. T is one who claims to have a photographic memory.
No. Really?
That's what I saw.
Wow. So he could list all the fools he's pitied.
Right.
All of them.
I'm wearing 18 chains right now. Doesn't even have to look down.
Wow. Who else? You got anyone else?
Teddy Roosevelt.
Okay.
Truman Capote.
Okay.
Leonardo da Vinci.
Sure.
I'm not sure if he was self-proclaimed or if people just, again, kind of ascribed it to him because he's a genius.
Right. He is a da Vinci.
But it is. It's like that kind of thing, like mythologizing extraordinarily smart people. Well, we equate memory with intelligence. Kind of like Sherlock Holmes, right? Of course he's going to have a photographic memory.
Uh-huh.
He's a highly intelligent person. So anybody who seems extremely intelligent, genius-level intelligence, especially someone in history, we would ascribe something like a photographic
right.
memory to him.
Well, there was an author named Kavya Viswanathan, who there was a case where this author was accused of plagiarism from another author. And Kavya was like, no, I just have a photographic memory. And right. I'm sure I read that book, but it was just so like burned into my brain that I must have just repeated these things without even knowing about it.
She said that.
Yeah.
In the New York Times. And so that gave occasion for a lot of journalists and scientists to come forward and be like, by the way, everybody, there's no such thing as photographic memory.
Right,
so.
But there is a thing as plagiarism.
Yeah, I was looking. I was like, what were some of the examples? It was pretty bad.
Was it?
In the original book, there was a line, in truly masochistic fashion, they chose to buy Diet Cokes at Cinnabon. Okay?
Okay. That's the original?
The plagiarized one is, in truly masochistic gesture, they chose to buy Diet Cokes at Mrs. Fields.
Yeah, that's plagiarism.
Yeah. It is.
That's not even like, that's plagiarism 101, like, no, I'll swap out one word for a like word.
Right.
And then it's fine.
Right. Isn't that crazy? She said this in the New York Times.
So
I have a photographic memory, so.
It's not my fault.
Right.
Another reason this is still sort of out there in the public sphere is the fact that there are people with amazing memories, and there are memory competitions and memory exhibitions and things like that.
Yeah, I looked into that, Chuck. I got sucked into memory. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot how cool memory stuff is. We've done a few podcasts on it.
Sure.
We talked about it in Can a Thinking Cat Make Me a Genius?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it in A Podcast to Remember, our memory one.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it extensively in the amnesia episode.
Right.
It's just some good stuff. And there's more we could do. But one of them is this whole idea of mind sports,
mm-hmm.
which includes memory. But it is organized competitions to show off your memory skills.
Yeah.
There's actually five mind sports. Memory, mind mapping, which is a form of like taking notes with like icons and colors and stuff. It's really neat. Like if you ever really need to commit something to memory, look into mind mapping. Speed reading.
Okay.
IQ, which is a little iffy to me. And then creative thinking. Like there's a mind sport competition for creative thinking.
Wow.
I was like, what is that? And you'll be given a question, like a little passage that says, like, the alphabet makes no sense. No one can make heads or tails of why it follows the order it does. Put the alphabet into a sensible order and explain how it makes sense.
Wow.
Stuff like that. So there's people who are answering these questions, coming up with amazing stuff.
So you would
stuff.
Just devise a creative system that makes sense, though.
Right.
It's got to make sense.
Yeah.
Or else you lose.
You'd lose. You'd be run out of town on a rail.
Wow.
Yeah, it's it sounds really neat, but there's with memory in particular, there's the World Memory Championships, and they're being held in Wuhan, China, this December 6th to 8th, 2019.
Well, you think of a show like Jeopardy, and there are things that you can certainly figure out question and answer-wise on Jeopardy.
Yeah.
But I would say most of that is recall.
It is recall, and that's the same thing with mind sports, too. Like, if you talk to a world memory champion, there's one in particular named Dominic O'Brien, who is what?
I don't know. It's just funny to think of these. Like, I picture him walking in with his boxing robe.
He's more the, you'd find him with, like, a neat scotch and a cigarette going in, like, a dark bar somewhere.
Oh, okay.
He just strikes me as a super friendly, neat guy.
And he's just, like, mumbling presidential returns over the past 50 years?
No, he's, like, running numbers or something like that.
Oh, okay.
That's my guess.
Gotcha.
He's, like, a bookie in a bar or something. That's what he strikes me as.
All right.
Again, really nice guy. I don't know he's doing anything illegal,
right.
But a British man named Dominic just strikes me as, like, a bookie.
Okay.
Anyway, he's an 8-time world memory champion.
Wow.
World memory champion. And he'll tell you, like, it's all training. It's practice. It's mnemonic devices. And just about anybody who is involved in mind sports will say it's all practice. Mm-hmm. And it's using techniques to expand your memory, which is really amazing because what these guys are doing, one of them is card reading.
Okay.
They will give you a deck of cards, mm-hmm. and you will go through, scan it in order, maybe be given a minute.
Okay.
To scan it, maybe 3 minutes, something like that. You'll put it down, and then 20 minutes later, they'll ask you to recall the deck.
In the order of the 52 cards?
And these guys, like, get it flawlessly perfect.
That's pretty amazing.
It is amazing, but they are saying, like, I have learned to do this. I was not born like this. I don't have a photographic memory.
Yeah.
I'm using things like mnemonic devices that are techniques to help me remember stuff.
Yeah.
There's
interesting.
Have you ever heard of a memory palace?
Yeah.
Okay. So a memory palace then is just like building a castle or whatever, and like different rooms are where you put different things. And specifically, you might have a drawer for a specific thing. And you remember where that specific thing is because
right.
you placed it in that drawer, in that room, in your palace that you've built in your mind.
Yeah. It's a very helpful way to remember things for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And also shout out to friend of the show, Nate DeMeo, and his great podcast,
oh, yes.
The Memory Palace.
The Memory Palace. Oh, my gosh. I never put two and two together.
Yeah. Nate's still around. Still a great show.
Well, sure. I don't think he died or anything, no. But I'm saying, like, I knew his show was named The Memory Palace.
Yeah, you should make that connection.
I never did.
You should have put it in The Memory Palace.
That is a great name, Nate.
Yeah, isn't it?
Well, that is a great. I liked it even more before, but I was just taking it more like Tolkien's cellar door.
Right.
Like, it was just pretty. You know what I mean?
Right.
Wow.
So there have been some connections that people have made with synesthetes and people with supposedly photographic memories.
Mm-hmm.
There's a writer named Solomon Shershevsky, who was a writer, I think I already said that, in the early 20th century. And he had these really amazing powers of memory. And he uses or used mnemonic techniques like we talked about.
He did.
But he was also a synesthete.
Right.
So the point was made here was that he basically had been doing this his whole life involuntarily because of associations that synesthetes make with color and sound and shape and things like that.
Yeah, that's how a memory becomes all the more solid, is associated with an emotion or a physical sensation. And he was a multiple synesthete, right? So rather than, say, like a sound having a color, this guy, when he heard a bell ring, he saw white, tasted salt water, and sensed something small and round from the sound of a bell. He would not read the paper while he was eating because the tastes that the words on the page evoked would compete with the taste of the food he was eating.
Oh, wow.
Like he had it just powerful synesthesia.
That's pretty cool.
So yeah, he couldn't help but have an amazing memory.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
The mnemonic devices, everyone uses those in school, or they tell you that's a good way to remember things. Mm-hmm. But then there's also and this was a Grabster article, what he just called relentless obsession. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you want to go on Jeopardy, memorize the Constitution. Memorize every state flag, every state bird, every state motto. It's like if you pour yourself into that kind of study and you're obsessed over memorizing a certain thing, then you could probably do it over time.
Right, yeah. Ed uses the example of the, what are they called?
The Shas Pollock.
Yes, who were a sect of Polish Jews who memorized the Babylonian Talmud, which is, from what I gather, one of two versions of the Talmud.
Yeah, I think there are like 8 or 12 books. It's a lot.
Yeah, like 5,000 pages.
Yeah.
And these guys would remember the Talmud so precisely that a case study from 1917 based on eyewitness accounts said that you could put a pin on a word on one page and push the pin through, say, 50 pages, and they could tell you the word that pin came out on 50 pages ahead.
So that's geography, too.
Kind of. That's a really good example of a potential photographic memory.
Right, but also an example of obsession.
Right.
I did a little more reading on them, too. They were known as mnemonists.
Okay.
For mnemonic.
Right.
It's interesting. That's just, I don't know.
I think that might have been a early Eastern European and Russian name for someone with amazing memory.
Uh-huh.
Because the Shereshevsky, he was written about as a patient just by the pseudonym S. By a psychologist, a very famous psychologist named Alexander Luria. And he titled his paper or book, The Mind of a Mnemonist.
Oh, okay.
So I wonder if that was like an old-timey word for like somebody with an amazing memory.
Mnemonist, that's probably a word. What did it say? Mnemonist?
Oh, yeah. I like the
way
you said
it. I think yours is right.
I like yours more, though.
Another thing is that a lot of times when someone you might think or they claim to have a photographic memory, it's on a very specific thing that they are obsessed with.
Mm-hmm.
Like a chess player may be able to memorize like these incredibly complex sequences or games that they've played, but may not have a great memory otherwise of other things.
Can't remember their anniversary, ask their wives.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure. Who's this other guy? John Van Neumann. He was a mathematical genius.
Oh, yeah.
And he could recite chapters of books and pages of the phone book. But apparently he was like, that was sort of where it ended. He didn't have like a memory outside of like these very specific things.
Right. He also never claimed to have a photographic memory.
Right.
Which is pretty cool because if anybody could claim that, he was definitely one of them. And he was a polymath, just straight up genius in general. It's a great varied thinker.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that he used to tell jokes with his dad in classical Greek at age 6. Which, I mean, if you're doing that at age 6 with your dad, it's a specific type of household you're being raised in. You know?
Yeah. That Stephen Wiltshire guy is pretty interesting. I remember seeing something on him a while ago.
I think we talked about him in the Thinking Cap episode, too.
Yeah, that might have been it. He's from London and has autism, and he's the guy who, you know, takes a helicopter ride over Berlin, lands, and then draws it in, like, astonishing detail.
Yes, but, and it is astonishing, but, and people put him up as an example of photographic memory, there are flaws in the recollection and the telling. These are renderings, are not architecturally precise drawings, but still, I mean, better than, it's astonishing.
No, I think what's astonishing is the art. And I think people should just like lay off the photographic memory part of it and just say Stephen Wiltshire is an amazing artist who like can see a scene and encapsulate it on paper with ease.
Right.
Or seeming ease.
Yeah. And then you really can't start a conversation about memory of any kind without talking about Kim Peek, who we mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Who is, again, the inspiration for Rain Man, but was much more friendly, much more outgoing, much happier than Rain Man was.
Yeah, he was a real jerk.
He was, well, he wasn't a jerk, but he was much more introverted. Kim Peek was much more happy-go-lucky and, like, very talkative and curious.
Yeah.
And for a very long time, he was considered to have had autism. But now they think he had FG syndrome, which is a very specific genetic disorder that's characterized by people who are friendly, inquisitive, hyperactive, and have a short attention span. And from what I understand, that describes Kim Peek to a key, to a T.
Yeah.
Not a key.
To a KP. He would, his whole thing, I mean, he had a great memory, but he had basically memorized the calendar. And when you say calendar, you mean... Like, that means the calendar of the past.
Oh, big whoop. It's Tuesday. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, but what day was, you know, July 1st, 1977? He can say, well, that was a Thursday, and on this day, these things happened.
Right.
That kind of memory.
Yeah, which is pretty astounding in and of itself. But he was also able to do things like read the phone book 2 pages at a time.
Yeah. Now, that's just off the charts.
This is... He may be the only human being who was ever born capable of doing this.
Yeah, his left eye was reading one page and his right eye would read another page.
Okay. Astounding that he could do that just visually, optically.
Yes.
He would retain this stuff.
Yeah, there's two parts
to
that.
And he could tell you the phone number of somebody's name. You went back and said, what is, you know, what is John von Neumann's phone number? And he'd say the phone number. He'd be like, really? I don't want to call him.
I thought you were about to say John Bon Jovi for a second. I mean, I got excited.
I have a joke in Greek.
Yeah, I mean, that's, that is.
Let's edit that part out.
Really?
No.
Okay.
you say really?
Here's the thing with Peek, though, is we talked a lot about the corpus callosum in the. What's it called? Restless hand syndrome? Alien hand syndrome.
Yeah, yeah.
One of our early, early podcasts.
That's right. I forgot that showed up in that.
The corpus callosum. We've talked about it in a bunch of shows, but that's what connects the two hemispheres. Kim Peek does not have a corpus callosum.
Like, not severed, not cut apart, not partial. It did not grow in his brain.
So he has two independent hemispheres of his brain.
And so when his left eye is inputting all this stuff and his right eye is inputting all this stuff, his brain can recall it separately but together. Yeah. That's just astounding.
Is he still with us?
No, he died a few years ago. I don't remember of what.
Yeah.
And like he was in his 60s, I believe.
All right. Well, RIP, Mr. Peek. And let's take a break now, and then we'll talk about a woman named Jill Price right after this. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber Slate Rust-Resistant Griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box.
With no use of coatings, you can use metal tools to flip, press, and scrape without worry. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. Everything rusts and nobody talks about it because they couldn't fix it until now. With Weber's new rust resistance technology, your Weber will last for years.
Yeah, when used, the carbon steel griddle hardens and bonds the surface, which reduces the ability for moisture to collect and rust to form. Plus, the griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees.
That's right. And with the Weber Works Prep Cook and Store system, you can keep cooking and cleaning supplies handy, carry food and condiments from the kitchen to the griddle, and even convert the side table into a prep station. So get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle. All right, as promised, we're going to talk about Jill Price, who I remember from the news in 2006 is when she kind of hit the big time with the news. And she was the one that she's called the woman who cannot forget.
Yes, and pretty accurately.
Because she has an audit. Well, they call it a couple of things now.
Uh-huh.
I saw HSAM, Highly Superior Autobiographical Memory.
Right.
And then another condition called hyperthymesia.
Yeah.
Hyperthymesia.
With a Y in 7E.
Oh, is this misspelled?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So
delete my correction.
And hyper means excessive, obviously. And then thymesis is remembering. So it's excessive remembering. I like highly superior autobiographical memory, though.
Yeah, and I saw where they found they know of at least 60 other people that have HSAM, whereas this said only two other people have been diagnosed with hyperthymesia.
Right. It's the same thing.
It is?
It's the exact same thing.
Okay, so are there 60 people or are there three?
There's 61 from what I understand.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, she can't forget stuff, and these people apparently— You know, if you go back and say, what were you doing, you know, 14 years ago and 2 months and 2 days, or give them a date.
Date, usually.
And then they will be able to say what they did, what they were wearing, who they were with.
What was on TV.
Yeah.
But the thing is, so you say, okay, great, fine. We found these are the people with photographic memories.
Right.
Not really.
Right.
Because it's highly superior autobiographical memory. And that is a very specific kind of memory. It's a type of episodic memory. Episodic memories are personal memories, memories you generate. As opposed to semantic memory, which is memories that you make of things like a car has two axles or something stupid like that.
Right.
Like a fact that you recall rather than an autobiographical memory. So the semantic memory is normal in people with HSAM or hyperthymesia. It's the autobiographical stuff that is astoundingly photographic.
Yeah, and people also tried, after she came out and made a— you know, kind of a big splash on the news programs. There were people trying to poke holes in her condition, saying that, like, well, starting in her teenage years, she started keeping these obsessively detailed diaries every day as well.
Right.
Which, sure, that can help. But just because you write an obsessively detailed diary every day doesn't mean you're going to remember it 25 years later.
Right. No, that's exactly the point, right? Yeah, maybe she is even using mnemonics to solidify it even further. But the fact that you can give her a date at random and she can remember it without consulting her journal, it's pretty impressive. It's definitely its own thing. And there's a pretty widespread consensus that this is a real condition.
Right.
But the fact that you said it, she keeps an obsessively organized journal. They believe it's possible that it's linked to obsessive compulsive disorder.
Right.
That the brains of people with hyperthymesia have the same traits, the same structures that people who have OCD have. And they'll very frequently have kind of this comorbid collection of stuff, or they have traits that somebody with OCD might have.
I also wonder if it has anything to do with narcissism.
Oh, really?
I don't know, man. It's autobiographical.
Really, yeah.
Like, they remember everything about their life.
Right.
But they might not be able to tell you, like, you know, who the president is.
Sure. But if it is narcissism, it's a masochist. No. It's a masochistic.
Okay.
That's the one where you're bad to yourself, right? Mean to yourself.
Why? Because yes, this is sort of a curse?
Yes.
Right.
So if you see interviews with Jill Price, she's not a happy person by any stretch of the imagination, because part of this condition is not being able to forget, like, emotions
pain.
Attached to
yeah.
things. Yeah. She after a very long time, met a man and married him, and they were very, very close. Like, she said later that he just got her. He was the first person to ever just get her mm-hmm. and accept her for who she was. Other family and friends would be like, can you not just let this go? Can you not get over something that happened 20 years ago?
Right.
And she's like, no, I really can't.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
guy just accepted her. And then, of course, he dies young from, I think, cancer or something like that. So rather than going through the mourning period and grieving like a person normally would,
right.
time healing all wounds,
mm-hmm.
that does not apply to somebody
yeah.
with hyperthymesia, because when they think of that day again or something reminds them of that person that and the memory of them is recalled,
yeah.
they experience that same pain like they experience the first time it happens.
Wow.
Forever. They
yeah.
cannot forget.
Sounds
it
like
does
a movie.
Not fade.
Like a sci-fi movie.
Basically.
What
but
was,
it's a real thing.
What was the Tom Cruise thing? Live, Die, Repeat?
Rain Man.
Yeah, that's it.
You know who else has hyperthymesia or highly superior autobiographical memory?
I think I know this.
You
who?
Do. Because you talked about her at length in the podcast to remember.
What? Who?
I'll give you a
I have
1 degree of separation and you'll figure it out, okay?
Okay. Don't say Kevin Bacon.
Tony Danza.
What?
No, I didn't say
oh, no,
you do a Tony
that's
Danza
John Travolta.
Impression.
Sorry.
That was not a bad Tony Danza.
Mona.
No.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
What's her name?
Yes.
Alyssa Milano?
No.
No.
Mary Lou Henner.
Oh.
From Taxi.
Right.
Alyssa Milano.
Well, wasn't she in Who's
she
the
just
boss?
Looked up from the gallery in the congressional hearing and went, what? Who, me?
I forgot about Taxi. Mary, that's right. Mary Lou Henner. That's
has,
right.
Like, has it. You can say, you'll give her a date or even like a Taxi episode.
Uh-huh.
She'll start reciting lines, the other person's lines. She'll talk about what she's wearing in the scene.
Yeah.
Stuff from the 70s. It's really impressive. She has the opposite experience, though. She loves the whole thing. Like, it's
oh,
a gift to her, whereas uh-huh. it's a curse to Jill Price.
My memory is weird because I will, and I'm sure we talked about this in the other memory episodes, but I can have the worst memory on the planet or the best, and it all just depends on whatever detail it is. It's either in the old brain or it's not.
Yeah.
Like, I can recall some very specific things that people are like, how in the world do you remember that?
You know, the thing that bothers me about this is we have had so much information pass through
mm-hmm.
our brains, and I retain so little of it. It's almost like I really wish I had more of it in there.
Yeah.
It's just not, though. I mean, I guess
yeah.
it is if you jog it, but I can't bring it to memory very easily.
Yeah, I often find that couples, though, whether that's you and I or us and our individual wives, can complement each other with their memories.
Yeah, yeah.
And their abilities.
For sure.
Like, I'm really good at remembering certain things, and Emily's really good at remembering other types of things.
Mm-hmm.
And together, it's usually works out.
It's a whole person.
Yeah,
right.
Basically.
Yeah, I know what you mean, for sure.
But you do that, too. You remember stuff that I don't remember, like Mary Lou Henner.
Right.
And the list goes on and on.
Right.
You remember way more than I do.
But I don't remember nearly as much as I should, I think, or that I wish I did. I don't deal in shoulds anymore, Chuck.
Right.
So should we talk about Charles Strohmeyer, John Merritt, and Elizabeth?
Sure. So... This was a little bit wrong, but the way I understood from what you sent me as a follow-up is that Charles Strohmeyer
yes.
was the one who did this initial research at Harvard in the 1970s?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this guy placed ads in newspapers. He was trying to do some studies on photographic memory.
Mm-hmm.
And all these ads were images of random dots, and you could take a test yourself just by looking at these dots very briefly and then trying to reproduce them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you did a really good job, you would follow up by getting in touch with him saying, hey, I nailed your test, dude.
Right. I drew
you should
this,
talk to me.
I drew the turtle on the matchbook just right.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember the turtle in the turtleneck?
Yeah. And there was a pirate too, right?
Yep.
What was that all about?
It was like an art correspondence course where you would learn to draw through the mail.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. I think we've talked about that on another episode.
Surely we have.
I think so.
Sorry for derailing you with the turtle thing.
No, that's okay. But that was the long and short of what he was trying to do and how he was trying to recruit subjects. Mm-hmm. And I believe he got, what, like 30 people that were successful?
15 of which he was impressed enough by to go to their house and follow up with.
And one person he really followed up with.
He did. He found out of the 15, none of them had photographic memory.
True.
But then later on, he came across a woman from a different study entirely named Elizabeth. And here's the thing. This is nuts, man. Strohmeyer figured out that if you took, remember the 3D? So in the colorblind episode.
Yeah, the magic image or whatever where you could see the sailboat and the big thing of dots.
Right. So this thing was, it didn't have to do with color. It had to do with overlaying the dots to create a 3D image.
Right.
So you need two sets of dots, and when you put them together, mm-hmm. they'll create like a magic eye poster kind of thing.
Yeah.
So what Strohmeyer figured out is you could take these two layers and separate them. Show one of the layers mm-hmm. to somebody you're testing for photographic memory. Say, really, get a look at this.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm going to wait like a day, mm-hmm. and then I'll show you the second layer. Mm-hmm. Bring to mind that first layer you saw and overlay it in your mind.
Brain, yeah.
And see if you can tell me what the 3D image is.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And Strohmeyer found one person who could do it, a woman named Elizabeth.
And he married her.
And he married her. And the weird thing is he wrote like this whole write-up in the journal Nature. Then he married her and no more testing after that. So
yeah, he took her off the market in every way.
He did. But they're like, well, we can't say that this is definitely a case of photographic memory. If it were true, this would be the closest thing to photographic memory anyone's ever come up with.
Yeah.
Now Kim Peek holds the title.
Yet Elizabeth is just... Could be the key.
Right. Could
be. Not being studied.
Probably not, though. I saw that in some follow-up tests, this would explain why he took her off the market, that she couldn't do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But then this guy, John Merritt, he came along later mm-hmm. and used those studies for his own purposes?
He did. He found that nobody could do this, that nobody is able to do that.
Okay.
But they did figure out that, hey, this makes a pretty good test to find eidetikers.
Yeah.
Because you don't show them one layer and then take away the other layer and ask them a day later.
Right.
You show them one layer, ask them to hold it in their mind, and then put the other layer underneath it. And if you're an eidetiker, you are typically able to see in 3D. And you can go do this online, actually.
Just don't blink.
Don't blink and like, don't say what it is you're looking at.
Like Michael Caine always says.
Oh, I've never heard him say that.
That was one of, he did these kind of corny how to act video series, I think, at one point.
What?
And Letterman used to play bits of them because they were really funny. One of them was, the secret to great acting, don't blink.
Was he trying to be funny?
No.
Oh.
Man, but Letterman would play it for laughs. Don't blink. And he would sit, he would show scenes and he's like, look at me. I'm not blinking.
And then Letterman would say, don't blink, like out of the blue 50 times the rest of the
show.
Well,
probably.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
You got anything else?
No, sir.
I've got one more. Lex Luthor.
What?
He supposedly had photographic memory.
He's not real.
Well.
Neither is photographic memory.
All the more likely that he had photographic memory. Well, if you want to know more about photographic memory, go take that Eidecker test. You'll love it.
The Mr. T thing is just...
Back to the podcast?
Maybe. I pity the fool that tripped me on 57th Street on July 29th, 1982.
Right. Well, Chuck made a Mr. T reference, which means then it's time for listener mail.
This is, I think, just some warm gratitudes.
Oh, I like that.
Hey, guys, I'm sure you get these emails all the time, but I'd be remiss if I didn't thank you for all your wonderful work. I've had a really tough time with mental illness, and there have been a lot of nights that your wonderful show has staved off panic attacks or worse. Thank you for keeping me calm and educated. Thank you for making me feel safe, even in perilous circumstances. Thank you for giving me something to talk about when my depression has kept me in a fog. Without your massive backlog of seemingly endless supply of fresh, fascinating subjects, I would surely be lost. Spent some time researching, and I can truly appreciate just how much time and energy goes into becoming familiar enough with something to explain it as succinctly as you guys do. You are superheroes and rock stars.
Nice.
You have truly saved me. Kindest and warmest regards, Georgia. And here's the thing, everyone. I may have read this before, but let's leave it in there.
Oh, okay.
Because if I did read this before and forgot it, it will have been within the last 6 or 7 weeks, and it will be a very funny ending to the memory episode.
Right.
Either way.
The listener mail's so nice, you read it twice.
Yeah, that's appropriate.
Well, thanks a lot, Georgia, two times over.
Maybe.
Thank you, Chuck, for that great ending. If you want to get in touch with us, you can go on to stuffyoushouldknow.com, check out our social links, and you can also send us an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.